Resources Committee. Today's date is Monday, March 9th, 2009. The time is approximately 9:38. Present are Senators Huggins, Stevens, French, Co-Chair McGuire is on the line, and myself, Wilikowski. We have two bills before us today, SB 121, Energy Efficient Buildings, and SB 31, Alternative Energy Tax Credit. And it's my intention to hear both bills, take testimony, and hold them until the next meeting so that members can digest and see if they have any changes they'd like to make or questions answered. The first bill we're going to take up is SB 31. Senator McGuire is the sponsor of the bill. Here to present the bill is her aide, Trevor Fulton. Trevor, would you please come forward, state your name and affiliation for the record. And just for the record, the time is about 3:39. So thank you, Mr. Fulton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Trevor Fulton. I'm staff for Senator Hazel McGuire. And Senator McGuire, the sponsor of SB 31, is online waiting to give a brief presentation of her bill. If you want to hear from her first, and then I'll follow up for technical questions.
Absolutely. Thank you. Senator McGuire, good to hear.
Good afternoon, guys.
Good to hear you. If you could put yourself on the record and go ahead and make your presentation.
So it's Senator Lisa McGuire from District 10, and I'm just going to give a brief overview. Most of you have heard the bill in energy, but for those that haven't, I'm going to introduce it, and then Trevor will take over from there and describe changes that were made between last committee and some of the ideas that have been proposed by others out there between last committee and today. So essentially, Senate Bill 31 is a production tax credit bill. It mirrors many of the production tax credits that we have on the books, including the more recent one for film production tax credits. And so the idea is similar, that we would offer an incentive, hopefully, to renewable power producers who invest in capital infrastructure in the state of Alaska in alternative energy projects. It's to include geothermal, wind, hydro, tidal, wave, biomass, in river, or solar. And we will allow them then have a 2.1 cent production tax credit. The second half of the bill, we've experimented with allowing public utilities and co-ops to earn tax credit that can then be traded on the open market in the form of a tax credit certificate. And we think that that's a way to incentivize investments in capital infrastructure and alternative energy for a lot of the utilities in Alaska are publicly owned. And so we want to incentivize their investments as well, as opposed to just new private sector investments. The bill has received widespread support throughout the state of Alaska and even outside the state of Alaska. It's been interesting to listen to the folks that have called in and then come by my office, energy producers from around the world, frankly, as far away as Israel, that are looking to this tax credit as a way to reduce the risk, frankly, that comes from investing in alternative energy projects. Most of the members of this committee know that there is risk still in the area of alternative energy. We're trying to get more of it online, but wind can be costly to invest in, and certainly getting it into transmission is it's also a difficult prospect. Wind blows at different times of the day and isn't always as predictable. Some of the geothermal projects that are out there carry a lot of risk. The guys from Ormat Energy, just as an example of one company, have said that they estimate it will be one of the more costly places that they will put money into in the world, frankly. It just has to do with, you know, many different factors, but Alaska's remote, it's vast. We don't have a lot of the geological data that other jurisdictions have. And so we're hoping that this tax credit will attract new projects to Alaska and will incentivize some of the utility companies that we have here, incentivize the projects that they're considering.
Thank you, Senator.
With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and as well, you've got Trevor there to to answer in person. And I appreciate the committee's understanding for me not being there in person.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Are there any questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll hear from Trevor Fulton now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I don't have a whole lot to add to what Senator McGuire just told you. I'm happy to answer any questions or help you understand the bill as much as I can.
Thank you. We have a CS. Do I have a motion to adopt for discussion purposes CS for SB 31 Energy version N?
Yep, so moved.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chairman, you said November, right? November.
Yes.
Right.
/ N as in November. Yes. I guess I'll object for discussion purposes, and perhaps you could walk us through the difference between the CS, the latest CS.
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. The biggest change we made between the version that came out of Energy Committee the other day and the version you have before you now, version November, was to add a clause that would limit eligibility for the tax credit to only projects or expansions that go into effect or come online after January 1st of 2010. There was a member of the committee, Senator Stedman, wanted us to strike a line from the bill before it came out in Energy Committee because he was concerned that if we left that language in there, it would have excluded expansion projects from being eligible for this type of tax credit. We don't really want to discourage expansion products. We think they're an important part of the picture, so we changed the language that would accommodate expansion projects while excluding existing projects that are already online. Second change we made was to change the definition of energy producer to require independent power producers to hold an RCA-issued certification. We were having some definition problems with energy producer. We wanted to make sure that the bill applied to not just anybody who sticks a windmill or a wind generator on their house. We want there to be a certain level of power production involved. In order to do that, we made this definition change. And then the third change between the Mike version that came out of Energy Committee and the November version before you is just some reviser suggestions. Basically, they switched a couple sections around. No substantive change there, just formatting. They renumbered accordingly, and they made a change from which to that in line 8 of page 1.
Any questions for Trevor? Yes, Senator Stevens.
If you just help me through this, Trevor, this is a subject I'm not really enormously familiar with. But, for example, let me give you an example. Kodiak Electric Association plans on having three wind turbines up in operation in September of this year, of 2009. So are you telling me then that they are now excluded from this bill to receive tax credits, to use tax credits?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the way the language is written right now with the CS that's before us, yes, they would be excluded.
And why would you do that?
Through the chair, Senator Stevens, the idea of the bill, the sponsor's idea was to incentivize people to take a harder look at the resources that are available in Alaska and determine if they could make a viable energy producing project out of it. It sounds like in the example that you just gave, they have already taken that look and they've already decided that it is a viable project and they don't need the incentive.
Thank you.
Trevor, do you have you run any estimates on what this would cost for various projects if we were to make this retroactive and to go back to projects that have been done in the past?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't actually crunched the numbers. I could try and get you that information. We do have an individual from the Tax Division, Dan Stickle, online who may be able to answer that, but I don't believe the Tax Division has crunched those numbers either.
Mr. Stickle, are you online? So the question has come up about costs. I guess if this were to be retroactive and we were to apply it to alternative energy projects going back, do we have any idea what this would cost?
The best estimate we would have is there's currently, according to the U.S. Department of Energy, approximately 1.3 billion kilowatt hours of alternative energy produced annually in the state of Alaska. So if you assume that entire amount would qualify for the credit, that would be approximately $27 million per year for 4 years.
Okay, thank you. Yes, Trevor.
Mr. Chairman, there's one figure that I could give you that might give you an idea of how much this could cost us if we went retroactively. And this came from Steve Hagetson, Director for Alaska Energy Authority. He did swing by the office the other day, and he mentioned if the bill remained as it was written at that stage, and it didn't have any exclusions into it, as it does now, excluding people or excluding projects past 2010. His estimate was $133 million in credits just to Bradley Lake Hydro Project. And that's just one project. That's the only example he gave me.
Okay, thank you. Senator Huggins, did you have a question?
Yeah, please, Mr. Chairman, thank you. Trevor, on page 2, on line 12, talks about the unused tax credits, and then you go to page 3, line 12, and it goes further on. Are those two correlated to one another?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, can you give me those line numbers one more time?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Page 2, line 12, page 3, line 12. They're both about tax credits. And the reason I ask the question, it talks about carrying forward, and then you go on page 2, and then you get to page 3, and it talks about you can carry them forward for essentially 20 years.
Through the chair. Yes, that's correct, Senator Huggins. Are you seeing a redundancy there that I'm missing,
well, no,
or is there something in conflict?
I have no idea what the sum of money we're talking about when you start carrying tax credits forward for 20 years potentially. I have no idea what sort of volume we're talking about.
Yes, sir.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins. I know it's not the answer you're looking for. Right now there is an indeterminate fiscal note on it, and that's because these are difficult things to predict. I don't suspect that somebody would stockpile these credits for 20 years and then cash them in all at once, if that's sort of a concern. And I know the vast majority of the tax credits that would be issued through this program would be sold or traded on an open market at a lower cost than what their face value is. So that's something else to take into consideration.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like a long time that it says, because it says except that the unused portion of tax credit may not be carried forward to tax years beginning after 2028, which is essentially 20 years away. That just appears to me like a pretty dark hole.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins. The reason we chose that date, it does seem a long ways down the line. I do understand your concern there. The reason we chose that date, we sunset the bill, or we sunset everything in the bill on 2025, which is the deadline. For the governor's proposed 50% renewable energy by 2025. And then if you issue, the reason we extended another, that's the 4 years that you have to use that tax credit that's earlier on in the bill.
Okay, so line 17 is the sunset provision?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? And we're joined by Senator Stedman. Any other questions for the bill sponsor? Yes, Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. my question has to do with the provisions of the bill relating to, and I just had it, expanding an existing system. I just want to get on the record that it's your intent that an expansion of an existing system allows you to apply the credit against the expansion, not the system to which it hooks up.
Through the chair. Senator French, that's correct.
Thank you. And then the other question I wanted to raise had to do with there's a paragraph in the fiscal note that deals with Fire Island, and that made me wonder whether I guess my question is whether since the state's going to wind up participating in Fire Island, whether we're going to grant a tax credit against investments that are I guess funded or in part funded by the state, whether we're not sort of overstimulating certain forms of energy production that way.
Through the chair. Senator French, we just had that brought to our attention in the last couple of days, and it is something the sponsor may need to revisit. I think that's a legitimate concern there, and we're very happy to accommodate any suggestions or any input from the committee on the best way to address that. But we are aware of that.
It's under discussion. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Any further questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, thank you. Let's go to public testimony. And online we have Tom Lakosh. Mr. Lakosh, are you there? Could you please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony?
Chairman, although I can't speak, thank you for this opportunity to testify. I recognize that problem with the double funding and had actually submitted language that precluded acceptance of the subsidy or application for the subsidy if the subsidy would be more than 50% of prior funding. You could probably find that in the committee notes from Energy. What I was hoping to address today was particular amendments regarding a subsidy of the 2.1 cent subsidy for production of alternative fuels and the subsidy applicable to conservation, and to make each of those applicable to anybody who produced alternative fuels instead of just limiting it to folks who obtained the RCA certificate. It's important that we, you know, encourage all folks who can provide alternatives. You've got the net metering. It seems logical that you at least provide some additional incentive to those folks. I would suggest the following language change in Section A, in Part A, where it says an energy producer that produces alternative energy may claim an alternative energy production tax credit in the amount of 2.1 cents for each kilowatt hour or for each 15,000 BTU of heat value for fuels of alternative energy produced, et cetera, et cetera. And then I would also suggest a change in the definition on, I believe that, 1 sub I. In this section, 1, alternative energy means, I would add conservation to geothermal, solar, hydroelectric, wind, biomass, hydrokinetic, or tidal and waving. And it's important to understand that many of our, particularly rural communities, are having difficulty sustaining their cultures and communities because of heating fuel costs, not just electricity costs. And if they can produce biogas or liquid biofuel, then we should be encouraging that sustaining of that type of sustainable community instead of them having to pay out for imported fuel. And just as well, we should encourage them to conserve. Now, together with my prior language suggesting, you know, that they not be given this double subsidy, I think you might have a very, very good bill here. It's important that, you know, we apply this subsidy equally to all citizens and energy, alternative energy producers in the state, and I think it would be a terrible discounting of the ingenuity of Alaskans if this subsidy would only apply to those who could obtain an RCA certificate of need. I might also mention that in the prior suggested amendments to this bill in energy, I suggested a two-tiered system that would take into account environmental impact. As we know, they're having a real air quality problem in Fairbanks and in the Mendenhall Valley in Juneau. And I had suggested a supplemental, a base subsidy and a supplemental subsidy that could, supplemental subsidy could be adjusted depending on adverse impacts to the environment, such as particulate pollution, impact on fish and game, impact on other natural resources, so that those alternative fuels, like in particular, unclean wood burning electricity or biomass generation that was unclean, could have that subsidy, the supplemental subsidy, cut off in specific localities. And likewise, there could be an adjustment by the Department of Revenue for those types of locally produced fuels and electricity that would lead to sustainable communities. So I can see where, if you're going through this process of social engineering here, this bill could more extensively be tweaked to provide for those things that we know are beneficial: improved air quality, less impact on fish and game, sustainable communities. So I might encourage all the committee members to go back and through the committee packet coming from energy and look at those prior recommendations if you want to do a little bit more and more precise social engineering here. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Lukacs. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Tom, Charlie Huggins here, Wasilla. You mentioned the term certificate of need, and I think you're potentially referring. You have a copy of the bill in front of you?
Yes, sir.
Right. I think you're referring to line 9 on page 3, certificate of public convenience.
Well, I'm getting to it back, Senator. Right. Public convenience and necessity under AS 42.05. Right, I think that should be stricken, Senator. We should have all independent power producers, whether they're producing alternative electricity or alternative fuels or conserving, be allowed to collect that 2.1 cents based on the kilowatt hour or 15,000 BTU of heat value of an alternative fuel or conservation. You conserve electricity, you can get 2.1 cents for every kilowatt you conserve, conserve heat, 15,000 BTUs of heat, you can collect 2.1 cents. And that would help us bring down our energy use to that which is absolutely necessary and produce alternative electricity and fuels that can provide for more sustainable communities.
Yeah, Tom, let me just to follow up on that, let me so I make sure I've got it right. If we were we had before us the Willikowski, a small energy producer, and they did not have a certificate of need, they would not be eligible, or the certificate of public convenience would not be eligible for this credit?
That's the way I see it, Senator, and I think it's a gross discrimination and and cutting off a very important resource of very ingenuitive Alaskans that can help us get down this road that we need to do.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Mr. Chairman, I, Tom, thank you for that and providing us the insight to it. And I would just ask Trevor if he could just share with us the conversations you had in Correction and Energy Committee on this subject.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, while we didn't discuss the topic specifically in Energy Committee, this is something that actually came up between coming out of Energy and today's hearing. The sponsor's thinking behind it, and I wouldn't call that thinking inflexible by any means, is that we're trying to target this bill and this program towards projects that are going to generate a substantial amount of energy. We certainly understand the value of smaller projects of Willacoosee, an independent power production company that can maybe supply power for 10 or 20 homes. But we think there needs to be some sort of threshold there just so this program doesn't get too unwieldy. We don't want to place too much of a burden on the tax division and on the accounting practices. And quite frankly, we didn't look into how the program would be structured if anybody who wants to sell power to their neighbors would want to participate. We didn't really explore that route.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I guess, you know, my recommendation, since in health care, certificate of needs become rather burdensome and a debatable subject, that we look at alternatives. I mean, it may be the right answer, but on the other token, I'd hate to see us get into the same challenge we have in the health field and the debate that goes on and suits and all those sorts of things over who can and who cannot. So I would, when the sponsor is with us, I think it would be worth our time to expand that conversation a bit.
Thank you.
And I'd be happy to consider that.
Okay. Mr. Akash, thank you for your testimony. And do we have anyone in the room who'd like to testify on SB 31? Yes. Please step forward, state your name, put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name's Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project. We're a coalition of now 61 organizations around the state, small and large utility companies, consumer groups, environmental groups, businesses, Alaska Native organizations, and state and federal agencies. And we do have a policy committee that meets regularly, especially during the session, to talk about different bills that are being worked through the legislative system. And we've talked about SB 31 a couple of times at our meeting 2 weeks ago and again this morning, and we support the bill. We're very happy to see this bill passing through the legislature. At the federal level, the production tax credit has been probably the most important incentive to get renewable energy projects around the United States built, and it has been going on for about 15 years or so, and it's really made a huge difference. Despite the shortcomings that the production tax credit has made a huge difference in incentivizing industry to go out and build these projects. There are some amendments that we'd like to respectfully submit, and we have already talked to the sponsor's office about these amendments, but for the benefit of the committee, I'd like just to go through some of the potential changes that the REAP policy committee has suggested. The first one is having a tiered system, and not based on the previous testifiers' criteria, but rather on population in which these projects are put. Because if you have a 2.1 cents per kilowatt hour incentive in the rail belt, where the cost of producing that energy might be 7 cents a kilowatt hour, that's a huge percentage. We're almost 33% of the cost of producing that energy. But if you're in a village in Alaska where the cost of producing the energy is 30 cents before you even put the overhead on top of it, then 2 cents is a much smaller percentage. And so if we were to have a tiered system that gave different amounts of credit for different size populations, we think that would actually incentivize this kind of development across the board. So we're suggesting a tiered system with four different levels. The first one would be for communities under 1,200 people, and that essentially gets all of the small village communities in the state. And speaking with Mary Kohler, who's the head of Alaska Village Co-op, she said her biggest village is Hooper Bay, at about 1,100 people right now. So around 1,200, 1,500 would be the first level. And we're suggesting a 10-cent per kilowatt hour tax credit for projects that are built in grids serving communities of that size or smaller. And remember that it is true that these co-ops who are getting these tax credits in the smaller villages are not going to be able to take the tax credit. They're going to be some of those entities that are going to be trading those tax credits and selling them, and it is true that they're going to be selling them at a discount. So they're not going to get the 10 cents per kilowatt hour. The other thing to consider is that there's just not that many people living in those villages. If you combine all the villages of less than 1,200 or 1,500 people in the state, it's not that many people. And even if you had a large amount of projects in those villages, we're not talking about a lot of kilowatt hours. And we'd be happy to work with the sponsor's office on trying to ballpark exactly how many kilowatt hours we might be seeing if we did have a certain amount of projects in those villages. The second tier we would be suggesting would be from about 1,500 people up to 7,000 people. And that pretty much covers all the communities up to around Sitka. It's all the hub villages, Bethel, Dillingham, Barrow, and so on, up to about the size of Sitka. So we're trying to get the second tier basically to include those communities. And we would suggest a 7 cents a kilowatt hour tax credit for those size communities. The third tier we are suggesting is 7,000 up to 40,000. And essentially what that's doing is capturing everything else up through Juneau except for the rail belt. And we're suggesting a 4 cents per kilowatt hour tax credit for those communities. And then everything over 40,000 would essentially be the rail belt. And again, we're not talking about individual communities per se, but rather the grid that serves. And so all of the communities that are attached to the rail belt grid would be included in the over 40,000, whether it's Homer or Fairbanks, all the way up through there. So our suggestion for a tiered system, we think, would actually provide incentives across the board to all the different populations in the state. The second thing that we are suggesting is considering extending the credit for more than 4 years. The federal production tax credit is 10 years. And of course, we would like to see a 10-year credit if we could get that. And again, I understand that there's a concern about how much this might cost the state in lost revenues, and something we have to ballpark and do some modeling on, perhaps, to see, you know, what the expected cost of this program might be if we had a tax credit that lasted for more than 4 years. But it gives more certainty to the folks who are laying out the risk on these projects. Another thing that we're not quite sure about is the provision that allows for the tax credit to be given to producers, whether they're using the power or selling it. And I understand that the sponsor's intention is to incentivize the production of power so that it can be used in industrial uses and other uses. And we see the merit in that. We're concerned about actually tracking the kilowatt hours produced, though, because if you have a company that says, okay, we put up our own system and we produce these many kilowatt hours and we want the tax credit for that, it might be difficult to track those hours and to know for sure that they actually produce that much electricity. One way to get around that is to simply have that producer become an independent power producer, obtain a certificate from the RCA, and sell the power back to themselves. And then they could get the credit. And we're not sure whether RCA would allow them to do, but that is a concern that we have mentioned to the sponsor. We've also noted the concern that was brought up about the potential for giving a tax credit to projects that also get other forms of state funding and state subsidy. And we're not sure exactly what to say about that, but we have noted that that's something that the committee is going to have to be wrestling with. I guess the last thing is a nomenclature item, and that is we'd suggest that all the words alternative energy be changed to renewable energy. That's consistent with the Renewable Energy Grant Fund that was passed last year. And the definition section for renewable or for alternative energy in the bill is totally consistent with the definition of renewable energy rather than alternative energy. And we're really trying to make a distinction between what renewables are and what other forms of energy are. So we would suggest that we change the title and also the every other place where it says alternative to renewable. I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Chris. Any questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Chris. I mean, I wish, quite frankly, that I'd have thought of this because it's important to the enterprise. On the other hand, I think, Chris, my question for you is, LBNA approved $100 million worth of projects. Have you looked at all about how many of those would have any eligibility factors as this tax credit?
Well, almost all of them would be eligible in terms of the date would be the issue that the issue that Senator Stevens brought up earlier about when a project gets put in the ground, whether or not they're eligible. So if some of these projects get put in before the 2010 deadline, they would be not eligible under the current wording. And likewise, if they waited, they might have some incentive to wait so they could get them. But because these credits are tradable, which is a very good thing, because most of the entities right now, and especially most of the entities that got money from the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, do not pay taxes. And so they're going to need to use that tradable provision. One thing I was thinking of just as I was hearing the testimony and discussion about it is if you set a time, a term, let's say 4 years or 10 years or whatever it is, what you could say is that every project gets that many years. And if, for instance, in Bradley Lake's case, you've already been in existence for more than 10 years, your 10 years is up. But if you get 10 years and you start in 2010, you start in 2009, but the program doesn't start till 2010, well, you might still have 9 years left. And so you might want to look at the term that way. But to answer your question, Senator Huggins, I think most of those projects would be eligible.
Please follow up.
Mr. Chairman, that brings me to my next point. The RCA, which is made up of good people, some of them are friends of mine, but they've had their challenges with some of the work tasks that they've had, timeliness and conclusions and all, and you know, sort of lingering non-conclusions. And if we start down this road with expanding things that RCA is going to have to do, how that's going to work on their task management and efficiency and ultimately you know, being able to satisfy the public. And would you help me out on that one quickly?
Through the chair. Senator Huggins, I don't know if I can offer you a specific answer on that. I think it's the same with other agencies that deal with energy in the state. This is a big issue. I think we need more people and more resources put into administering these programs, and RCA would fall under that category too.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a clarification on earlier comments you made. It's about the community of Sitka, which is 9,000 people being treated in one group and with some kind of a credit mechanism at 7 cents.
Through the chair. Senator Stedman, yes, we came up with this morning. I hadn't had time to check exactly what the population was, but our intent was to include communities up through Sitka, actually, and be the second tier, which would we would suggest 7 cents.
Okay. And if I could, Mr. Chairman, yes. then Juneau at 4 cents with 30,000 people, but Sitka, Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg are all, and Juneau are all in this 10, 11 cent range on KW, maybe 9, depending on how much you use and so on and so forth. So I would be curious on why there's a kind of a population mm-hmm. a mechanism involved there when clearly there's a lot more similarities amongst them mm-hmm. outside of that they should not be all grouped in one category or another.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, we actually looked at a bunch of different ways to categorize these tiers, and one of the ones we all really liked was actually a percentage of the cost of energy. So, for instance, you'd get a certain fixed cost or a certain percentage of maybe 30 cents a kilowatt hour if you're in a village or 6 cents a kilowatt hour if you're in a hydro community. We thought that might be too politically difficult and administratively difficult to get through. We really felt like that might be something that would be difficult to administer. And we talked about that. We talked about the size of projects, too. We said, well, maybe we should say projects under 1 megawatt. But then we thought, well, you could stick a project under 1 megawatt in Anchorage, and it'd still be under 1 megawatt. So we kind of went through different scenarios for tiering it. And we're not wedded to the population one, but I think it was the one that we felt would most track the cost of energy. But we agree that the cost of energy is really the issue here. And what we're trying to do is incentivize the communities that have the highest costs.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Stevens.
Chris, could you help me understand the issue of trading tax credits, where you would go to do that, and how the discounts would operate? You were saying that a producer would have to take certain discounts. Would that be, could you help explain that a little
sure.
bit?
Sure. Well, for instance, there's a lot of big corporations in this state that have high tax bills. They'd like to have some credit off of their tax bill. They would be able to buy those credits. But the nature of the market is going to make it such that if a village has $1 million worth of tax credits that they've gotten from renewable energy production, they're probably not going to be able to sell it for $1 million, because there's going to be competition from the next village over that's willing to sell them for $900,000. So essentially what it would be doing is the folks who would have the credits would be selling them to the corporations that have a tax burden. The federal production tax credit doesn't have a tradable provision, and that's something that's really hurt the co-ops in this state, because they've never been able to take advantage of that federal program.
So there would have to be established a clearinghouse, and would that be under, who would do that?
My understanding is that there are already tradable provisions for tax credits, corporate tax credits, and there might be somebody who knows more about how that works, but there's several sections in this bill that talk about how to apply for them and so on. So I'm assuming that there is a mechanism and some structure already for that, but I'm really not that familiar with it.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Chris, I'm not sure where you're familiar with the oil and gas production tax and credits and what have you, but as I recall, and Senator Stedman could probably help me on this a little bit, that we debated, for hours and hours and hours about credits and being able to sell credits, and as I recall, I think we ended up putting a provision where the state could buy them. Is that accurate?
Correct.
Do you think that would be a feasible thing to do here, or what would your recommendation be? And the concern, as I recall, was that smaller organizations would get gouged by larger organizations, and the state would be the leveling mechanism.
Through the chair.
I didn't share that skepticism.
Okay. Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I'd have to study it a little bit more before I gave an answer on that. It does seem that there might be some potential disadvantage from smaller, less sophisticated entities trying to sell these to large, very sophisticated entities trying to buy them. So. If that debate's gone on before, maybe there's something to that that we really need to look at, but we didn't consider that yet.
Please follow up.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And my final question for you has to do with certificate of public convenience or certificate of need. Your thoughts on that subject?
Well, there's a lot of concern in this state on both sides about the issue of net metering.
Right.
And whether or not we have net metering, and there's lots of different arguments about it. But essentially what you're doing, if you don't require a certificate, then you're doing backdoor net metering, because what you're doing is you're giving some kind of credit back to producers. It's not a true net metering where you would actually get paid the retail price, but it's going to open up that whole debate about net metering, and that's one of the reasons that we felt it was a good idea to have either a minimum amount of production, which I think was in the last version of the bill, 400 kilowatts, so a significant project, or the way it's been done now, which is simply go to an independent power producer level and have the RCA regulate it. I don't think we have a huge preference one way or the other, whether it's a limit like 400 kilowatts or if it's an IPP. And if it looks like it's going to be very difficult for all these folks to apply for IPPs, maybe that's too much. But if you allow it to everybody, then essentially you're getting all the way into that other issue of net metering.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Great. Thank you. Chris, thank you, as always, very enlightening. Is there anyone else in the room who'd like to testify on SB 31? Is there anyone else online who'd like to testify? SB 31. Okay, seeing none, we'll close public testimony. And we're going to set the bill aside, and we're going to move on now to SB 121. And if I could have Shelley Morgan come up. Okay, and this is a Senate Resources bill, and it requires the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to assess and retrofit heated and lighted buildings in the state. It encourages performance-based contracting where it has guaranteed savings. I'd like to thank Representatives Guerin and Thomas on the House side. They have a similar bill, and also Senator Joe Thomas on the Senate side has a similar bill. And it's expected that by passing this bill, we could save tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars over the years in heating, natural gas, and fuel costs. The state has done a similar type of work on 24 buildings, and they've saved $365,000 at 06-07 rates and $557,000 at 08 rates. And they've cut natural gas usage by, I believe, 15%, electric usage by 22%, fuel oil by 36%, and have had a water savings of over 400%. If the state had done similar types of contracts on, had done 25 similar contracts to what we've done, we would have a savings of about $13 million per year at 08 rates in the first year alone. And this is also a job creation bill because the retrofitting and the work that's to be done requires a lot of people to go out and do this work. So I believe this is a win-win bill, which will ultimately save the state a lot of money, conserve energy, and help reduce carbon emissions. And here to present some of the finer details is a member of my staff, Shelley Morgan. And if you could put yourself on the record, and good to have you here, Shelley. And is there any specifics you want to add that maybe you could just tell us a little bit about the details of the bill?
I'd like to, this is Shelley Morgan, staff with Senator Wilikowski's office. I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for hearing this bill and for hearing my testimony today. This bill, Senate Bill 121, is designed to decrease the cost of operating state facilities by reducing the amount of energy consumed by public facilities over the next 15 years. This bill requires the Alaska Energy Authority to establish an energy use index database so that the state can identify the amount of energy consumed by public facilities and use that to prioritize retrofitting of public facilities. The prioritizing will allow the state to realize the greatest savings by prioritizing the buildings and facilities which consume the most energy first, and then work on buildings that consume less after those are already retrofitted. This bill requires the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to retrofit, where cost-effective, all public facilities within 15 years of the completion of the Energy Use Index database. Where there are no funds, no other funds or partial funds available, this bill allows the department to use performance contracting with a qualified energy service company so that the state can achieve energy audits and efficiency upgrades through a pay-as-you-save system. This system allows for no money to be spent out of pocket until the savings are actually realized, and within 15 years or less, all paybacks will be made. And at that point, the state will be saving large sums of money. Beginning in 2004, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities executed a performance contract for 8 facilities with Siemens Building Technologies. Siemens has now completed 2 performance contracts for the state, totaling 16 facilities. Each contract has taken about 2 years to complete, and energy performance reports are provided to the department for the first 3 years after the retrofits are complete. As Senator Wilikowski indicated, the energy performance report from the first contract did show in the first year that the state did save $365,991. And with the 2008 rates, it would have actually been $557,096. I don't know. I don't really want to repeat what Senator Wilikowski has already said regarding those measures, but
why don't we see if the committee members have any questions? Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Shelley. Good presentation, and good to see you. We see the savings. What was the cost to gain the savings?
The cost for doing this, because of the performance contracting, there does not need to actually be any upfront costs for the work itself. The only costs that would be necessarily incurred would be for staffing and also for putting together the database. And we did receive fiscal notes on those. Actually, the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities provided us with two fiscal notes. And these fiscal notes that they provided were actually based on the original bill as opposed to the committee substitute. So they were based on a 10-year as opposed to a 15 years. So with 15 years, the cost would be spread out and would be less per year. But looking at if we were to not use performance contracting, this project would be exorbitantly expensive. It would be in the range of $17 million. With performance contracting, we're looking at a fiscal note of about $363,000 for DOT and $100,000 for AEA for putting together the energy use index database.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you for that clarification. And just to correct my ignorance, new construction, or do we have an updated code factor that we don't have to go back and retroactively fix them?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, for new construction, I think if I'm understanding what your question is, if we're doing new construction to the most recently published version of the International Energy Conservation Code standards, that will be a lot less costly than retrofitting by not doing it to those standards. And then with the retrofitting, we won't have to actually pay for the work itself, except for through the savings that we realize, and then we will be saving more. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
No,
kinda.
Let me ask it one more time, okay. Just kind of directly. If I build a new building, will it not require any of these upgrades by codes and by state specification requirements?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, if you build a new building under the guidelines of Senate Bill 121, that new building would be required to be built to the most recent published version of the International Energy Conservation Code standards, which would bring it to what we're trying to bring these other buildings to through retrofitting. Over time, the other thing that this bill does is it allows for updates to be made through utility bills. So currently, it's written in that every 10 years, and I think there'll be DOT indicated earlier today to me that they're more interested in every year, but updates can be made every 10 years or every year using utility bills to the database. That allows us to then see if there's any substantial inefficiencies. If there are any substantial inefficiencies, certainly any new buildings built now, it's going to probably be quite a while before we see substantial inefficiencies, but you know, 10 years, 15, 20 years down the road, when the conservation code has been updated, there's a chance that retrofitting may then need to be done much later. But I think that would kind of tie in with any building that's going to need maintenance over time and upgrades.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Shelley. And we've got quite a few people lined up to testify, so I'm going to ask that people limit their testimony to 3 minutes. And I'd like to start with online, and we have John Davies from the Cold Climate Housing Research Center. Are you there, John?
Hello, this is John Davies. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. And if you could please put yourself on the record, and we'll get started.
Okay, thank you very much. Yeah, my name is John Davies. I'm the research director at the Cold Climate Housing Research Center here in Fairbanks. And I'm testifying in favor of the bill. We are very happy to see it. Senate Bill 121 addresses two of the key recommendations that we made in our report, which I presented to your committee some weeks ago on Alaska Energy Efficiency Program and Policy Recommendations. The first recommendation was to establish an energy use index, which you've just been discussing. And the second recommendation was for the, the recommendation was that the governor should direct that state agencies reduce their energy consumption by 20% from 2000 levels by the year 2020. So this bill definitely addresses in substance those two recommendations, and so we're very supportive of that. I just have two quick comments. One is I do think that, and I just got a chance to, as you were talking, to sort of review the CS, and just in a quick perusal of it, I have two comments. One is in section four, where it talks about the energy use index and the energy use database. It still seems that in subsections one and two, there's a little bit of crosstalk between the concept of the index and the database that reports the index. And so I think that it should be clear that the index is a methodology for calculation, for characterization of the efficiency of a building, and the database collects all the information that's required to make that computation and then also reports the index as well. And that it's important to do that, I think, I just underscore that that allows one then to prioritize the work that needs to be done. DOTPF and other state agencies have an enormous number of buildings, and having an index like this allows you to figure out where the most cost-effective place to start is on all these retrofits. The second comment I have has to do with some comments that Senator Huggins was just making regarding new construction and the standard of the bill for energy efficiency, which it appropriately goes to the International Energy Conservation Code and the ASHRAE standard 9.1. I would respectfully ask you to consider actually making it a little bit stronger standard than just that. Most people that are trying to really do retrofits and save energy would try to achieve a target that was, say, 30% or even 50% below that standard. That is to say, you would be using 50% of the energy specified in that standard, or 30% less of the energy specified in that standard. So that's just a suggestion. I support the bill fully as it is, but it could be even a little more aggressive, and we could save even more energy. So that's my testimony. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Thank you, John. And any questions? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Hey, John, good to hear from you. You made the comment about the governor directing. The Alaska Energy Authority works for the governor. Have you had any conversations with Mr. Hageson or any of his subordinates about the governor directing?
We certainly have. I mean, over the years I have, not in the recent weeks I haven't, but I know that Mr. Hageson is very supportive of this general idea. The point I was making was just that the specific recommendation in our report was that, you know, quote, the governor should direct, and it isn't important in this context whether the governor does it or the legislature does it, as long as it gets done.
Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, and thank you for that, John. And the other one you mentioned on page 4, line 27, mentions energy use index database described, and that's the Alaska Energy Authority. Are we talking about a major new task load for AEA, or is it just a matter of somebody hitting a button to record the data?
Well, it's sort of in between those two. I would judge it's not. I don't think it's a major job, but it's not trivial either. I think we estimated in our report that if you had hired a consultant to put this whole package together so that it would be the database would be existing and that there would be a fairly easy way to enter information into that database, that you were looking at about a $50,000 sort of effort. So maybe that would help you characterize the size of the effort. But the basic information that goes into the calculation of an energy use index is things like fuel bills and square footage of the buildings, all of which should be readily available. The main task, and I guess one other suggestion I mean would suggest, is that subsection 2 of that section 4, that it, where it talks about preparing the baseline, the database, it should be contemplated that the database needs to be maintained, and that's a non-trivial task. It probably will require a quarter of a person's time or something on that order to do that statewide.
And I just should note, we do have Mr. Hagenson on the line, and we can go to him for testimony.
I'll answer that more directly than I.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, and it's, thank you very much for that, John. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions? Okay, great. We also have, let's move on next to Steve Hagenson. Are you there on the line?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record and present your testimony. And I don't know if you heard the question that's been asked, but if you could address that as well, that'd be great.
Yes, I can do that, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stephen Hagenson. I'm the Executive Director of Alaska Energy Authority. And it's good listening to you, John, by the way. What we plan to do is pretty much what John said. We're going to go out there and collect, we're going to look at the total building envelope for the energy going into it. We're going to measure the total energy into the building. So it'd be gallons of diesel fuel, MCF of gas, kilowatt hours of electric, anything else going into the building that's energy related. We'll put them on a common basis, probably a BTU basis, and then we will divide by occupancy or square footage, some measure like that. And then that will give us a kind of our index. Then we'll also be working after we get start collecting data, we'll be putting it into a database that will do a lot of the math and be the repository of a lot of that data. Once the data is in that database, I'm not sure you have to go back and redo the math every year, but maybe we'll focus on doing just the work on the buildings we've modified, because the numbers should be pretty static. After we get that database put together, then we'll be working with the DOT to work on putting regulations in place.
Did you have any other testimony you wanted to present, Mr. Hagenson?
Nope, that's it. I'd be available for answering questions if you'd like.
Yeah, any questions from the committee? Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Steve Charlie Huggins here from Wasilla. Thanks for being available. My question for you is, and you and I have talked about this a little bit over time, is every once in a while you see you and your guys and you look kind of blurry-eyed because the number of hours and days they're working out of a month. Here's another task. You're within your robust capability and your blurry eyes, you're up to this one?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, I think we can handle this thing. We just brought on a brand new person who's all, he's just been on what, about 3 weeks now, Sean? And he's all charged up, ready to go. So I think we're going to put this right in his lap and let him work on it. And we're not going to put it on any of the guys who are maybe worn down a little bit.
Well done, Steve. Cross reinforcement. In all seriousness, though, in this part of it is, and you and I have talked about this before, but I'll just say it again for the record. You know, we continue to get way ahead of ourselves as far as having a state energy policy, and we just started, you know, cramming square pegs and square holes and sometimes round pegs and square holes. Does that make you uncomfortable as our energy authority person?
Senator Huggins, through the chair, not at all. I think there's more than, there's an energy policy, energy plan type aspect, but there's also a large component called conservation. And I've always been a subscriber to the fact we should use all of the BTUs we convert wisely. I think that is conservation, increasing, or actually efficiency increases, I'll call it, which may be a little bit different than conservation, but increasing the efficient retention of heat in a building is probably one of the smarter things we can do. And I mean, you can get away with using less energy by using it smarter. And I think this is a great step towards that direction.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, Steve.
Great, thank you. Other questions for Mr. Hagenson? Thank you, Mr. Hagenson. Next, we'll move to Randy Virgin from the Municipality of Anchorage.
Yes,
Are you there, Randy?
Hello, this is Randy Virgin.
Okay, if you could put yourself on the record and please go ahead and present your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, my name is Randy Virgin. I work for the Municipality of Anchorage. I do sustainability and efficiency projects here. And I'm calling in to speak in favor of SB 121. I want to thank the committee for sponsoring the bill and the staff for all their hard work. I think, Mr. Chairman, you were right. This is a win-win bill. And I just would like to point out that we're one of two states in the union without some sort of efficiency policy specific to buildings. So it's definitely high time. I'm sure you all know this, but in the U.S., buildings account for 39% of total energy use and a whopping 72% of electricity use. Efficiency initiatives like this are real and can be applied throughout a system to achieve measurable results. For example, California, which has the nation's leading efficiency effort and policy, has kept its per capita energy use flat since 1974, as the rest of the nation has gone up 50%. Here at the municipality, I just want to give one example of some success that we've had, and then I have three comments specific to the bill. Anyway, here in the municipality, we've tackled outdoor lighting to tremendous results. We've installed over 4,000 high-efficiency LED fixtures over the last several months, and we have seen a 56% reduction in energy use by installing, you know, those fixtures are beating the old HPS fixtures by 56%. The simple payback on the capital investment for those fixtures is 6 years, and that's assuming today's prices for energy stay flat and we're not calculating any labor efficiency savings. These bulbs actually last flat five times as long as the old fixtures, so we're going to be sending our guys out. We're not going to be sending our guys out to change bulbs nearly as frequently as we used to. They'll be able to do higher value work. So just looking at the energy savings, we've got a return on investment of 6 years. And I just want to point out that this investment in efficiency is beating the market. There aren't that many places these days you can see a guaranteed return on investment, and efficiency is one of those places. We made this purchase back in August for these fixtures. If we had put that money into the market, I can assure you we'd be doing a lot worse than it is now by investing in efficiency. A couple of comments specific to the bill. The bill sets out a goal of reducing energy use in our buildings by 20% in 15 years. Given the numbers I just gave you on lighting alone, I feel very confident that we could easily double that to 40% without trying. And if you really wanted to push facility managers to reach a little bit, I think you could set the bar at 60%, and that is achievable. Specifically on page two, I'm sorry, page three on the new draft, is paragraph E on line 20. The section basically allows the department to determine that a retrofit is not cost effective. And I would urge you to consider setting some type of objective standard for whether or not a retrofit is determined to be feasible. And one standard I think that could potentially make a lot of sense is by setting a time frame for return on investment. For example, if you do an energy audit of a building and the return on investment is 15 years or less, then the facility manager needs to go forward with the retrofit. If the return on investment is beyond 15 years, then you know, whatever threshold you set, that number of years, could determine whether or not the facility manager goes forward with the retrofit. I think that gets to Senator Huggins' question about, you know, we hear a lot of cost savings numbers, but how much did you spend on the front end to get those cost savings? And by setting a return on investment standard, you know, that's the way to set the proper balance that you believe, you know, where that balance should lie in terms of how much you should invest up front to earn the savings over time. And then my third point is the very next section, section F. Again, it allows the department to not comply fully with the ASHRO standards if there's a specific, you know, climate of an area. I don't have a really clear idea of how to do it, but I think we could also tighten that up a little bit and make it a more objective standard to figure out, you know, exactly how we allow the department to not comply with the standard. And great. That's all I've got. Thank great. You very much.
Thank you, Randy. Any questions? Okay, seeing none, let's move on to Chris Hodgins.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please state your name and put yourself on the record.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Chris Hodgins,
and I'm a project manager with the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities in Anchorage. And I want to thank the committee for giving us the opportunity to provide the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities concerns about the bill. And before I start, I want to thank the committee's staff again for keeping us in the loop on this piece of legislation as they were developing it. We're in favor of the bill. We have concerns on the 20%. We do understand now that it is a goal and not a mandate. However, we wanted to express our concerns that by stating 20%, we're not misconstruing that it is totally possible in all circumstances. There will definitely be circumstances where we can save more than 20% in some buildings, and there will be other circumstances and where we might not be able to save 20% in some buildings. We want to make recommendations regarding the energy use index, and we were thinking that rather than updating the energy use index in only in specific circumstances, that the energy use index is updated continuously on an annual basis. And the reasoning behind this is to allow the facility managers to evaluate their buildings on the energy per square foot basis using the same annual period or a same average of annual periods, so that they're evaluating all their facilities in such apples to apples and not comparing different annual periods to each other. And this becomes important when they need to globally evaluate the performance of their buildings on an annual basis and to make sure that they don't miss possible inefficiencies of their buildings when they're looking at all of the buildings at once. We also want to emphasize that there is much work in the management and administration on the project side of Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, even though the capital cost of the projects are paid for and through the realized energy savings of it. But thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Hodgin. And any questions? Okay, seeing none. We still have a few people online, but I want to move. We're getting close on time to the people that have been waiting here. And in the room, we have Caitlin Higgins. You could please step forward. Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony. You got 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Chairman Wilikowski and members of the Senate Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Caitlin Higgins, and I'm here on behalf of the Alaska Conservation Alliance, a coalition of 40 Alaska conservation organizations with a combined membership of over 38,000 Alaskans. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of SB 121, the Public Buildings Energy Efficiency Bill. The passage of this bill is critical for several reasons, but I'm going to talk about three, and they are that, one, it addresses the demand side of our energy equation. Two, it will result in instant savings for public facilities across the state. And three, it will better position us to receive federal stimulus funding for efficiency. On the first point, we are really pleased with the work the legislature has done to address the supply side of renewable energy in Alaska. In fact, we were here just 2 weeks ago testifying in favor of SB 131, Senator McGuire's bill, that encourages investment in renewable energy. While we do not intend to diminish the importance of renewable energy investment, it is equally important to address demand for energy. First, after all, the cheapest energy is, of course, the energy we don't have to use. This bill, SB 121, is a great first step in addressing our energy consumption in Alaska. On the second point, SB 121 will result in real savings for the state. While reducing our energy usage through efficiency will reduce the emissions of greenhouse gases and hopefully slow climate change, the real benefits will be seen by Alaskans in savings. By upgrading our public buildings and making them more efficient, everyone stands to benefit. Those public dollars will no longer be wasted by inefficient lighting fixtures and drafty windows, and can instead be put towards other programs or saved for a rainy day. Finally, there's the federal stimulus package to consider. There is $3.2 billion in new funding to help local governments implement energy efficiency programs. The bill appropriates $3.2 billion for the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. The program seeks to decrease energy consumption and reduce fossil fuel emissions, and can be used for, among other things, conducting residential and commercial building energy audits, establishing loan, rebate, and incentive programs for energy efficiency improvements, providing grants to nonprofit organizations for energy efficiency retrofits, and developing programs to conserve energy and transportation. There is another $4 billion for the national authorization of two types of bonds that states and municipalities can issue to finance renewable energy and energy efficiency projects. These bonds carry a low interest rate as the bondholder receives federal tax credits in lieu of interest. Finally, the bill appropriates $3.1 billion for the state energy program, which provides grants and other funding to state energy offices for energy efficiency and renewable energy programs. The normal matching requirements under the program do not apply to the funding provided for the, provided by the bill. I hope that Alaskan can receive some of these funds, and states with an energy efficiency plan in place will be higher on the list for receiving federal efficiency funds. This bill could send a clear signal that Alaska is ready to use federal dollars for efficiency upgrades. Just as we are cutting wasteful spending, we should be cutting wasteful energy use, and this bill will do just that for public hearings. In conclusion, we support this bill. It's a strong and necessary step toward energy efficiency in Alaska, and we hope to see it move quickly through to passage. I'd like to thank you today for sponsoring this bill and giving me the chance to speak on behalf of the Alaska Conservation Alliance. Thank you.
Thank you, Caitlin. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah. How do you spell your last name?
Higgins, H-I-G-G-I-N-S.
I thought maybe somebody misspelled it there. It would be Huggins or something. Okay, thank you.
I like your name.
All right, thank you, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Next up, we have Steve Ash. Could please put yourself on the record, and you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Steve Ash. I'm from Sitka. I'm here representing Sitka Climate Action Plan Task Force. I just wanted to give you an update on what Sitka is doing, because Sitka has already begun a process very similar to Senate Bill 121. Over a year ago, Sitka joined ICLEI, International Council for Local Environmental Issues, and our task is very similar. The first thing we did was establish an energy use index, what we call carbon emissions inventory. And this was for everything in Sitka: transportation, public, private buildings, residents, boats, everything that the city of Sitka consumes in terms of energy. And then we focus on the municipal aspect of it, municipal buildings and municipal transportation. So our first goal was to establish the energy use index. Our second, which tomorrow night the assembly will be voting on, which is our goals. And our goal is a 25% reduction in carbon emissions by the year 2020. And that's 2003 levels. That's as far back as we have data for. I want to give you a data point here, because after the 2003 inventory was done, and since the 2008 inventory was done, we already have a 10% reduction in emissions. And this was done by one very simple task, and that was updating an old inefficient oil burning furnace in Blatchley Middle School to a high efficiency electric boiler. So this job is going to hopefully be easier than we think, and we're very, very confident we're going to achieve our 25% reduction by the year 2020. So we're going to go after all the low-hanging fruit. Another school has a similar situation with an inefficient oil-burning furnace. And at $3 a gallon for heating oil, this reduction will result in over $250,000 per year in savings for Sitka. And that's at $3 a gallon. By the year 2020, I think we can all expect to be paying more than $3 a gallon. So I just wanted to share with you what Sitka is doing, and hopefully you can see how this would have a magnifying effect on the rest of the state.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Ash. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? All right. Thank you. Marcus Walker. Welker? Did I get your name wrong? You put your name on, put yourself on the record, and go ahead and testify. You got 3 minutes.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marcus Welker, and I'm a UAA student, part of the Alaska Conservation Alliance and Alaska Conservation Voters, and I'm here to testify in support of Senate Bill 121. Recently, I've become very involved in studying how much energy Anchorage is using, and I'm actually working for Randy Virgin, who you heard from earlier, on working on Anchorage's energy index. And what we're finding is that the buildings are using immense amounts of energy. And we're finding that by simple measures, we can significantly reduce this. And so I'm here to tell you that I really think that Senate Bill 121 can save immense amount of money for our state and can really begin to send us in the right direction and be leaders as the state, instead of watching these other cities like Homer, Fairbanks, Anchorage, kind of have to do this work from the ground up. So I think it's really time that a bill like this helps push the cities and everyone around the state in the right direction to save energy. Also, there's programs out in the villages currently that are doing some retrofitting, very similar to this, and they're actually, just by replacing these fluorescent light bulbs with more efficient light bulbs, they're seeing 60% reduction in the energy bills of these buildings out in the villages, which is really, really important when diesel costs so much and your electricity costs so much. Also, UAA and these other private entities could really help be helped to see the state moving in the right direction. And for that reason, I'm here to tell you that I really would like to see Senate Bill 121 passed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, Marcus, just Charlie Huggins from Wasilla. Just want the Nanaimo Center. You said you work in Anchorage. You know, riding up, wonderful facility, and you know, been to some great occasions there and learning seminars. But I've heard multiple people, including myself, make the comment about, sure would hate to have to heat this place. Talk to me.
Well, unfortunately, you were talking about those standards earlier, right? The energy, the ICC standards, right, or whatever. Well, unfortunately, with no standard, that building was built incredibly inefficient. And so, unfortunately, the building is built now, and Anchorage has to pay for the electricity for a long time. And so a retrofitting program like this for the state could help deal with those extremely high cost of dealing with a building like that by retrofitting it and decreasing the lifetime cost of the electricity.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thank you. Thank you, Marcus. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, next up, Chris Rose. Put yourself on the record. You got 3 minutes, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project. We're supportive of the bill. We're very happy to see the committee sponsoring this bill, and we thank you for it. I agree with most of the testimony we've heard before, so I'll just be brief and add a couple things. This is going to stimulate the economy by creating jobs as well. I mean, there's a lot of jobs associated with energy efficiency retrofits. Performance contracting is a proven method to get this work done. We may be seeing more performance contractors entering into the market here in the state, and it's exciting to see this happening. The other thing that I'd add is that the 9 recommendation areas that John Davies mentioned, the Cold Climate Housing Research Center report that came out last year, also included state leadership. And I think this is excellent state leadership in focusing on the public buildings that this state maintains and operates. And hopefully that will lead to more public awareness of this issue of energy efficiency and conservation, make it more exciting for people to actually take part of it and see that they can save money. So we really support the bill, and we hope that we can see it passed this year. Thank you.
Chris, thank you again. Any questions? Yes, Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you. And Chris, just very quickly, I read through a pretty large brochure and was mentioned by Ms. Higgins earlier about the grants were going to be available. And it appears to me that in this legislation that if it's appropriate and we could do it, that any things that we would need to legislate, some things we need to legislate to make sure we can be able to qualify for grants, that we might want to entertain expanding this if it's required. My assumption, though, without expansion, this would qualify us for some grants. But am I on the right track or not?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, I think you definitely are on the right track. By having a program that's established, we are at least in line. Without any program, it's very difficult for us to apply. And I know that Sean Scaling is working now at Alaska Energy Authority. He's going to be working on this, and we'll be looking toward him to be the point person on that.
Great. Excellent point, Senator Huggins. Okay. We've got 2 more callers online, and if we can try to get through those today, we'll try to power through that. Ken Bauer, if you could put yourself on the record.
Hello?
Yep. You've got 3 minutes, Ken.
The best use of state funds, especially with our low oil revenues, is the projects where we can get them done, you know, in performance contracting, where we're not going to have to use, you know, millions of dollars of state funds. And this is a very important way to do it. As Chris Hodgins had said, there is some upfront cost as far as administration, but when you think about, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars as opposed to millions of dollars, I think it's a very good investment and the way to reduce energy without incurring, you know, huge expenses on the state side. Two other things I'd mention is that when you're doing these upgrades, that you end up with an efficient building that is usually a healthier building because you have proper airflow, proper air quality, and it's been proven that that should improve working conditions and hopefully workforce productivity. And also, as far as the additional jobs, that the passage of this bill is definitely going to increase the need for more jobs to design, engineer, and implement these projects. So, anyway, I fully support it and encourage the committee to move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Any questions? Okay, and lastly, we have Tom Lakosh. And if you could put yourself on the record, Tom, you got 3 minutes.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Tom Lakosh in Anchorage, Alaska. And I support the bill. You need to combine this with SB 119. That's where the energy efficiency standards for new construction is. And there's some overlap and conflicts with SB 119 that you guys should take a close look at. You need an SB 240. And moreover, what you need to do in order to get in line for the state energy block grant for the stimulus bill is to comply with Section 410 of the stimulus bill. That starts on page 32. And in particular, it requires both residential and commercial building codes that we don't have. And so we need a real comprehensive conservation bill, both retrofit, new construction, commercial and residential building code that you guys should sit down and work through here and get. And I would note that it's the residential building code has to meet the International Energy Conservation Code, the most recently published, and that's under 410.2A, and under 410.2B is the commercial building code of the ASHRAE 90.1/2007. So I would support this bill on its own, but you, in order to get all of the money out of the stimulus package, you need to sit down, combine this with 119, and add the residential and commercial building codes. Because everybody in this state is so touchy about building codes, I might point out in 410C or in 410.2.
And Tom, I'm just going to just want to let you know, we actually are working on a building code bill so that we can be eligible for the stimulus funds, just to let you know that.
All together, put 119, 121, and your new commercial building code together. Work them all out. You've got conflicts between 119 and 121. You need to work those out. I wholly support Randy's position about having the 15-year payback period as the computational standard for what you will and won't subsidize. That's critical because that likely goes far beyond any of the standards, either the international code or the ASHRAE code, and that makes most economical sense, you know, for and most managing, you know, the most sense for managing specific projects as to what you should and shouldn't fund. And that's somewhat addressed in 119, where it states that there's a 15-year period which you're supposed to be using to compute savings, but it's not clearly spelled out. Randy's language is the best on that. I implore you to go back and get all three of those bills together so we have one that dips through the legislature, we can get the governor to sign it, and we get our funds, and we can pay for all of these energy savings that we really need. Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Tom. Any questions? All right, seeing none. Is there anyone else online wishing to testify? Okay, seeing none. Anyone else in the room wishing to testify? Okay, seeing no one, we're going to close public testimony. I want to thank the committee members for staying a few minutes over, and we're going to hold this bill over, and we're with that, we're adjourned.